This is Living the RV Dream, episode 70 for Friday, August 31st, 2018.
I'm riding with my RV, wherever I want to be, 'cause I'm free in my RV.
Well, hello, happy campers, and welcome to another edition of the podcast, episode 70. And the end of August, I mean, it's time flies when you're having fun, and sometimes even when you're not. But anyways, here we are. My name is Robert Morales, for those of you new here. And my wife and I, we travel towing a Winnebago Micro Mini, a travel trailer, 19-footer, very nice. We've explored so much of our country. And of course, recently, we just got back from Europe, and we had a great time in the... We did the northern most countries in Europe, Finland, Norway, and Sweden. And that was a great trip, full of surprises and a great learning experience for sure. I cannot wait in a couple of years to be back in the old world with more time, because this time we only had 2 weeks and I had one of these ambitious itineraries. But anyways, by the time you hear this, we're probably departing on our fall road trip. Okay. Let me stop right there. Unfortunately, I have to re-record this part of the show because since the time that I recorded it, something has happened. I'm going to have to postpone that trip. In the original plan today, Friday, I was going to leave. I was going to mooch dock somewhere near Cocoa Beach. And then we were going to have a meetup at Daytona Beach. That's not going to happen anymore because old Kia, my tow vehicle, is having some problems. You know, I took it to the mechanic because, you know, she's 143,000 miles and I'm pretty sure the vehicle was in badly in need of maintenance, you know, spark plugs, belts, all that jazz, front brakes. So I took it there and apparently someone made some kind of malpractice on my vehicle. And they killed the engine. I think they dropped something into the engine and they ran it. And, you know, when that happens, it's still not clear what happened. But what is clear is that, I mean, they told me that they're going to put a brand new engine on old Kia. So actually, that is really good news because it is going to last a long time after that, ostensibly. The bad news is that we're going to have to postpone this meetup. I was really looking forward to meeting some of you guys, you know, put the faces together with the names and you hear your voices and just hang out, you know, for a couple of hours there at the Daytona Beach Brewery. We might do it in the following week, but I don't know yet. I don't know. And my whole plan, you know, I had this whole plan to take, about 10 days to drive north all the way to Hershey, Pennsylvania, to the Hershey RV show. And now I might have to just drive straight through, you know, boring I-95. It's been a while, so it might be cool. I'll stop at that tourist trap called South of the Border between North and South Carolina. And then I might be able to explore a little bit. I want to explore a little bit of this area of Pennsylvania, you know, that town called Centralia, which is, it's been on fire. There's like an underground fire for I don't know how many decades. And some other towns around the area, maybe, you know, Amish country, Lancaster, before getting into the Hershey RV show, in which we are going to have a meetup. I haven't really had time to set it up yet, but we can have something impromptu. I just not really that organized. I just don't know the grounds that well yet. I've never been there, but if you guys know of any place that might be suitable to hold a short meetup, it doesn't have to be long or super organized. Just a place for all of us to meet up, you know, for about an hour, you know, and say hello and you know, hang out for a while. Please let me know, Robert at TravelingRobert.com, or just go to TravelingRobert.com and send me a voicemail. Just press that. It's like a green button that says, talk to me. Anyways, now without further ado, I have a great interview in store for you guys. I've been following these guys. We've been following each other for almost 2 years. They're a full-time family. They've been traveling in the United States with an RV. And then they bought a camper van in Europe. And and they travel all throughout Europe and then Southeast Asia. And they're a family with three children. And without further ado, here's Angel and Kaylee Vrappi, When in Rome Travels. All right, coming to us from a non-disclosed location in the northwestern part of the United States. Here we have Kaylee and Angel Vrappi, the When in Rome family. Welcome, guys. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us, Robert.
Oh, you're very welcome. And it's been too long. I mean, we spoke, about a year ago, and you guys were... Actually, first, we met here in Miami probably about a year and a half ago. You guys were touring the whole United States in an RV. Yeah. By the way, the Vrappi family, they have three children, two boys mm-hmm. and a girl, and they've been nomadic for the better part of the last 2 years. And
you can't get away from this lifestyle. We wanted to, after we came back from the trip, we wanted to sell the RV, and we just couldn't do it.
We kept it.
Okay, first of all, for the listeners and the viewers who don't know your background story, can you tell us a little bit about yourselves? I know you are Angel from Albania and Kaylee is from Montana, and your love story is kind of a little bit of a fairy tale love story. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Do you want to tell or should I tell?
You should tell.
Okay. I think Angel moved to Italy when he was just a young man. He immigrated there from Albania. I think by way of Greece, he went to Greece for a bit and then ended up in Rome. And he kind of grew up there on his own. He lived in like a school for boys, which was really neat. They taught them all kinds of skills, but there were a lot of other kids there from all over the world who were doing the same thing. And he ended up working in restaurants as a server. And I moved to Italy to study abroad. And I ended up meeting Angel while I was there. And then I stayed. I overstayed my visa.
About 14 years ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago now, but I ended up staying, and then I ended up working there for a while. I worked at the Vatican as a tour guide, which was a really neat experience. And then we had our daughter, Fiona, there in 2005. Mm-hmm. And we were working a lot, and we just realized that we probably could not continue to work in Rome, especially since we were both foreigners. Mm-hmm. It was pretty difficult with a new baby and stuff. So we moved back to the U.S., and Angel went to culinary school, and we did various jobs for a long time, always in restaurants. And then we ended up opening our own restaurant in 2010 in Montana, up by Flathead Lake and Glacier National Park. And then we opened a second restaurant a couple of years later, and we were working, we had three kids by that time, and we were working like 90 to 100 hours each a week for the better part of the year during tourist season. And we decided... We were tired. We had enough. I mean, I think we both liked restaurants, but we weren't seeing our kids ever. We had a full-time nanny. It was crazy. So we decided to sell everything. And we did. Within about a year and a half, we sold our house and our cars and our businesses and everything we owned, all our furniture, all of it was gone in a year and a half. And we bought this RV, this Class A. And we decided to spend 1 year traveling around the U.S., mm-hmm. which we did. And Angel started a YouTube channel so we could sort of document it. And I think initially it was just a plan to like show our kids later on and remember and have a good laugh together. And then it sort of ballooned into something much bigger, which was really fun for us. Yeah. And then we spent this last year traveling around the world. So we spent one full year, July to July, traveling the whole world, circumnavigated the globe.
Yeah. But first we started in Europe in a little camper van.
Yeah.
Not so comfortable, but it was summertime, so we're just in the south of Europe, mostly spent time at the beach for 3 months. And we sold that camper van and flew to India, spent a month and a half in India, mm-hmm. and moved on to Southeast Asia. We went to Thailand, Malaysia, Indonesia.
A lot of countries.
Cambodia,
yeah.
In total, in 1 year, we did 27 countries. So that was...
Ended up in Mexico, and then we finally ended up back in the U.S. in early July.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was quite the adventure, especially with having three kids with us, backpacking around the world. But we didn't rough it. We stayed in okay places, average places, I would say.
Yeah, we didn't live the high life, but yeah. I think that was sort of the purpose, is to spend our time and money doing adventures and things rather than accommodations.
Right,
we backpacked. We didn't have a lot of stuff with us, but it was really fun. We're really glad we did it.
Yeah, and the kids, hopefully they'll remember it. If not, they'll watch this YouTube videos and...
Yeah, at least you have that for them to remember. And then it's been quite an adventure, I'm sure. I'm sure Fiona will remember all of it, but the little ones, maybe not so much. But let's do this a little bit by... what did I do? Hold on. I can always cut this out. I pressed the wrong button here. Press Alt. Okay, here we go.
Cool.
let's go by parts. Let me ask you about Europe, which was the first part of your international... trip. Which resources did you use? How did you find your camper? How difficult it is to buy an RV in Europe if you are a foreigner?
Difficult.
Yeah. Very difficult.
It is not easy. Angel is from Europe and he has citizenship in Albania, but unfortunately they're not in the European Union, which would make a difference if you had that sort of...
Well, I could buy it in Albania and travel Europe for 90 days, but that seemed like a lot of work for... I have to get special international license and all kinds of stuff because we're not part of the EU.
Right. Yeah. Right. That was, we initially flew into the UK, into London, and we had intended to buy one there because it's a little bit...
We had no plan whatsoever. We just said, we'll just fly into Europe and we'll figure out when we get there.
Yeah. We sort of fly by the seat of our pants with everything.
It always works out though. Yeah. So you got to get that out the door and just kind of go. Something will come along and something will happen.
Yeah, we weren't able to buy the van in the UK. There are a lot of vans there, but most of them are, the driver's side is on the opposite side. And because we were going to be mostly on, left-hand side driving roads for the majority of our trip, we copped out on that.
We've never driven a car. Drove a car like that, so we're just kind of I was intimidated by and then we just kind of skipped that plan and we went into the Netherlands, and they have in the US side, I guess I would say, because it's like they are on the wrong side, they could be in the
left hand side.
We're on the wrong side probably, but so we flew into the Netherlands and we found out about this lady. She's actually American, and she saw the need for people wanting camper vans, and she opened a sort of a company. Then she, you give her the money, essentially. You have to trust her with your money. She buys the van for you, does the registration, insurance, and she hands you the keys. And she draws a contract, so, she owns the van, and you're just liability-wise, I guess. And
that's what your insurance is for.
At the end of the year, at the end of your, how long you want to keep the van for, you give it back to her, and she will sell it back at maybe 70, 75% value. And she makes a little bit of profit there. So that's the deal.
That worked for us. And we did look into, we watched your trip around Scandinavia, Robert, and we saw that you rented the RV, which was so cool. We had initially looked into that, but for our 4.5 months in Europe in the middle of summer, it was going to cost us like $12,000.
Yeah, between 10 and 12,000.
For the rental, not for insurance or gas or anything else. Like, not cheap.
No.
So we did find this option to buy and then resell back, which I think we ended up spending about $4,000 for it, which saved us a bunch of money. Yeah. So it worked out really well.
Yeah, I'm asking you guys as much for our listeners and viewers as for myself, because this is something that I would love to do maybe in a couple of years, because... Definitely. Yes. Two weeks in Europe, even in the Scandinavian countries, just left us wanting for more time. I mean, we just...
We just so sad.
The surfers.
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah, and they have the really amazing Hymer camper vans over there, and they're like the exact right size for Europe. You could never take anything larger than that there. Yeah. We saw one Class A in our time there, and we thought, oh my gosh.
Yeah, we had to stop and take a picture of it, because we're like, this is... insane how big it looks compared to the other ones.
How do they drive it on the roads? And there's so many low bridges and low clearances and tight spaces.
I mean, our van, we had trouble with our van because some bridges there are like tiny, like under two meters.
Yeah.
And our van was like a little bit over 2 meters. So we had trouble with that little van. Imagine RV. So
I can't. Yeah, but the high are perfect for Europe. And so we thought we'd like to go back again someday and get a Hymer. and then be able to do that.
You got hooked into that whole European.
Yeah, well, one of those little ones that look like a small Class A, like a miniature kind of. That's the one you're talking about. Yeah, I saw a lot of those up in the Scandinavian countries, and even the one that I had, which was about 25 feet long, that was way too long for Europe.
Yeah.
I would think something. I think 6 meters is the sweet spot for like a class B plus over there. And
we'll maybe pay for the hour to take showers and wash clothes, but we never stayed overnight into a campground.
We did at the very end when we were starting to get really cold in November. We needed the electric.
Yeah, to stay warm.
But other than that, we free camped for 4.5 months. We didn't pay for any spot, so it was great.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way in Europe, because it seems in Europe anyway, you don't get full hookups. Really, the value of staying overnight at a campground, this is minimal. And for some reason, when I'm talking, I cannot hear you guys. I don't know what's going on with the duplex of the call, but anyways, it's going to be hard because we cannot talk on top of each other. But anyways, let me ask you, which resources did you use to find free camping sites in Europe? I know because you told me about one of them, but did you use anything else?
Yeah, there are various websites. There is an app you can download. It's just like a couple of bucks. It's called Campendium. Mm-hmm. And that was really helpful for us in the north of Europe.
Yes.
And then when we got down to Greece and some of the Eastern European countries, and particularly in Spain, mm-hmm. And the south of France too, there's another website called Park4Night, like the number four, Park, number four, Night. And it gave you a lot of boondocking spots. It also gave you like dump spots if you needed it, mm-hmm. places to get water, free campsites, and then also places where you could pay. And then I guess just various campers just input information and ratings in there. It's really helpful.
Yep.
And then there's one more website that we didn't use as much, but I know a lot of people do. It's called VW Furgo, F-U-R-G-O. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of free campsites on there. So we hardly paid for anything. We did pay to take showers occasionally.
Yeah.
Mostly we showered at beaches.
Yeah. rivers, lakes.
We were pretty free going with that. And then when we didn't have options, we would just shower out of the back of our van.
Oh yeah,
we were roughing it.
It's crazy how creative you get, and if your circumstances are, then you have to go to dinner and you need to shower. You make it happen.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. I can bet you, because these five of you, and I've seen pictures of the what you call it, the Nugget or the Nugget. And that was it looked, I think it looks smaller in video than in real life, probably, but it was tiny.
Oh, it was small as it looked.
Yeah, it was small. It's funny because it's a Ford, it's an American Ford, and it's a Westphalia conversion with a high top. That's what we loved about that van, because we could stand on it. I mean, we're not very big people, 5'8", 5'4".
Yeah, we're small.
But we could stand on it and cook, which is really amazing. And had bunk beds, sort of a loft above for the kids to sleep above us. And we knew they were warm up there and safe. So
Well, they were slept above us. And it was small, of course, for the time we were there, but we were not doing it, you know, for years and years.
Right, yeah.
So just for those 5 months, it worked out really well for us. We just wanted something small enough to be able to go anywhere and park anywhere and not worry about it. So
totally.
Yeah.
Any language barrier problems when you were up there?
We both speak more than one language, which is helpful. We speak Italian, and then we both speak a pretty fair amount of Spanish.
It's mostly like kitchen Mexican, but it gets, because we worked in restaurants and with a lot of Mexicans.
We have a lot of kitchen Spanish, yeah.
We call it kitchen Spanish, because it's not really Spanish, you know, so.
But you know what? The amazing thing is that no matter where we went in the world, in particular in Asia and in India as well, everybody speaks English.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my experience in Scandinavia as well. It's like the to some level.
They actually love you to speak English to them, like especially in the Asian countries or India. Indians love to speak English. So, I mean, like in the Netherlands, people, you can mistake them for English. Is like they
their
speak
English.
English
is so good.
It's so good in the Netherlands. It's amazing how good their English is.
Yeah.
You approach someone and say, "You speak English?" They're like, "Of course," obviously. With no accent at all.
Yeah. I know. I was in Amsterdam and it was exactly like that. People were like, you didn't feel like you were in a country.
Because everyone speaks English. Mm-hmm. We did find a little bit of a language barrier in the south of France.
Yes.
We stayed at a lot of farms and stuff. Mm-hmm. And they don't need to speak English. Why would they? And so I decided after that time, I was going to learn French. I was like, I do not care. I'm going to learn French. It's important. So I've been studying French for about 5 months now. Mm-hmm. So it's on my list of things I got to know.
It's also good for her because she's in the wine field and French will help her.
It's helpful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So hopefully, and Angel speaks quite a bit of Greek. So when we were in Greece, we were able to get along there.
Yeah.
But of course, English is the international language. And so
it speak totally, English totally is, yeah.
makes life easy.
Yeah, I know, especially in France, if you at least try, like, bonjour, this and that, it's like an icebreaker when you go to, to a place where
they're with the English attitude, and they even if they do speak it, they won't speak to you because you're just being disrespectful by not at least saying, you know, a few words.
We tried to learn words in every country we are in just to, you know, say hello and thank you. Mm-hmm. And we would teach the kids those things and yeah, the kids, again, it's amazing how fast the kids pick up on words. Mm-hmm. We were in the Netherlands. We were there for about 3 weeks total. They loved, like, seeing the similarities between English and Dutch. It was so funny. They loved it.
Yeah, the kids catch the languages incredibly fast. I've been watching another family, the World Towning. I don't know if you know them on YouTube. And their daughter is, like, super fluent completely in Spanish in like, 6 months or something like that. So that's, like, incredible. Okay, let me ask you something, we could move now to Southeast Asia as well. Which place felt more foreign, most, we are not in Kansas or Montana in this case anymore?
India probably felt the most
intense
for us, I think. I mean, you don't go to India to not be put out of your comfort zone. But we were out of it pretty solidly for about 6 weeks there, which was really an experience. India is very different and really busy, but the people are so kind. The
people are nice.
So that made it a lot easier. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think the place that we enjoyed the most was Cambodia.
Yes.
Because it felt the most genuine. It felt like tourism hadn't quite gotten a hold of the culture yet. Mm-hmm. And so when we were in Angkor Wat, and that felt really touristy, but once you got outside of that area, you really got to experience a true Cambodian culture and lifestyle.
People are just very genuine. Like, they say like Thailand is the land of a thousand smiles, but we found that Cambodia, everyone smiled at Cambodia. Cambodians were such a nice people.
So kind, yeah.
And then Thailand has had tourism for a while now, and they just kind of like over annoyed, and you know, people are not spending as much money now because the economy probably is not as good.
Maybe a bit more aggressive towards
tourists. Yeah, a little aggressive. They just want you to buy and leave them tips because you know you're American and you leave 20% back at home and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And we found that a little bit annoying, but
Cambodia was our favorite place only because of how genuine the experience was.
And you can't beat the beaches in Cambodia. We stayed in this island for a week, just like...
It's called Koh Rong.
Koh Rong.
Yeah.
And it's like a little paradise. Like it only has like 4 restaurants in the whole island. And it's just amazing. Just
amazing.
Great time. It's cheap.
Cambodia is cheap,
very cheap. And that makes it a little bit more accessible.
For sure, yeah. You can do a lot of things for not very much money, which is nice.
Mm-hmm. I'm losing track of how many countries you visited in Asia. Where else did you go?
Well, we flew. So when we left India, we flew right into Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Malaysia is amazing.
Amazing, yeah. Amazing country from top to bottom. And it's so modern.
Yeah,
and the people all speak English, which is nice.
That's where they have the Petrona Towers, right?
Those are beautiful. Mm-hmm. And the food in Malaysia is really good.
Yes.
You can drink. Well, everything you drink is soup, but laksa. And just a lot of really, the names are so foreign to me. But there's like, you know, lots of like stir fries and stuff and spicy soups and fish sauces. It's
right up our alley. We love that kind of food.
Yeah. And our kids are pretty proficient with chopsticks. So it was like, they were like, dig out the chopsticks.
They love duck.
They do
love
duck.
Yeah.
That's amazing because, you know, at least in the United States, kids are kind of picky eaters. How did your children do with eating like strange, different foods?
Our kids are restaurant kids. So we call them restaurant kids because they know manners when we take them out in a restaurant. They don't like leave the table or, you know, and they try everything.
They're really adventurous.
They found out that if they tried something, they love it. And it's their favorite food, like oysters, for example. Like, how can you get a 4-year-old to try oysters? But our kids do, and like they gorgonzola. They love like escargot. They like the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
But they don't like French fries or like.
They like fries, but.
Well, I mean,
like
they don't
chicken
love them.
Fingers.
Like chicken fingers. They don't like this stuff.
They won't eat it. Yeah. So when we try to just. We try not to make a big deal out of food. We just let them try everything. And then they're fine with it. So, and Hugo is probably the most adventurous. He tried the tarantula and the scorpions and the bamboo worms. I mean, he was into it. Yeah. He wanted to try everything.
They're pretty good. I mean, they're like a delicacy over there. They spray some soy sauce over them. They're fried, so like crunchy. And, you know, you just got to get over that texture.
Scorpions were delicious. The tarantulas were horrible.
Yeah.
They were so gross.
The tarantulas.
I don't know if I would be able to. You guys are definitely a lot more adventurous. And your kids are going to have this lifetime of experience, you know, that is.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't trade, like, bamboo worms for, like, popcorn at the movies, but it's kind of the same concept. It tastes the same.
Any place around the world that you've found similar to the United States? Like you say, oh, this is almost like home. Or it could be in Europe, could be in Europe, could be in Asia.
Oh, Europe, I think, is becoming more homogeneous. Mm-hmm. You know, it used to be, Angel, of course, grew up there. And the first time I went, I was a teenager. So it's been 20 years since the first time I went to Europe. And the culture seemed really separate at that time. And I think due to, you know, social media and the internet and mm-hmm. free borders and things like that, the cultures are becoming very similar and they're really adopting a lot of English, you know, / American types of food and culture and words and media.
Yeah.
So I guess when you've been traveling for a long time, mm-hmm. those things sort of make you feel sad.
Yeah.
You know, like you really want the full experience and you really want to walk into a grocery store and really get a full experience versus seeing like McDonald's on every corner. And
Burger King and Pizza Huts and KFC. They're everywhere. There's not a big city we went to around the world that did not have
except
McDonald's.
Except for Cambodia. Yeah.
Cambodia didn't have any.
But KFC is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Like we've never seen so much KFC.
And they love it over there. It's amazing. It's actually expensive. It's more expensive than it's in the US.
Yeah,
like dollar wise.
It's not cheap.
It's like a delicate. It's like a special. They take their girlfriend out to KFC, like the date.
Anniversary,
it's amazing.
I remember when I lived in Spain, and this was in the late 80s, McDonald's was a restaurant somewhere like that, like you would go to eat, or KFC, you know?
Yeah, totally. We ate it at McDonald's in Hong Kong, breakfast a couple of days, and it was just so funny, because it's like very... It's got a lot of Asian components, mm-hmm. But it feels like a little bit higher quality food. You know what I mean?
Totally.
Like it was just really interesting how that worked out. Mm-hmm. So we don't normally eat fast food. We really try to eat locally and support local businesses. Mm-hmm. But occasionally you get into it.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to see.
You just kind of miss home and you're just like, oh, pancakes. We haven't had pancakes in like 4 months. And the kids were like, let's just go to McDonald's. We'll have some pancakes.
Totally. Yeah.
Get that fix.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, another thing that I found in Europe now that I went recently is that like these hypermarkets are a lot more ubiquitous than I remember in the past, you know, like, and it's like a Walmart, you know, everything is in a different language, but it's that kind of huge markets. I don't think like 10, 20 years ago there were as many.
That sort of specialization still exists, but you have to work a little harder to find it. So mm-hmm. I think that was one of our favorite parts about living in Rome, was if we wanted to get like a really nice cut of meat, you just go to the butcher and you tell him what you want, and then that's what you get, of course. Mm-hmm. And he tells you how to cook it and how to season it, and you can get, you know, fresh bread from the baker every day. And
a lot of stops, but they're so close and a walking distance from your home, so it didn't really make a big deal out of it. But I can see like Auchan is kind of like in Italy. Auchan is like what would you call it? Like
it's a French grocery chain, and it's huge. It's like a Walmart or something.
It's like a Walmart, And my sister loves it because she's busy with kids, work, and stuff. One stop, she can get everything now. But you know, I just kind of miss that, and it's sad to see the old butcher going out of business over there too, just like here in the U.S. back in the day. But it just, you know, we're evolving and we're moving faster. You know, like our lifestyle kind of, like my sister said, she couldn't afford to do all those stops because she's in traffic an hour and a half coming home from work, and she has to pick up her kids from school, and the whole thing is just kind of sad, but convene at the same time.
But however, still in small towns, rurally, yes. those mm-hmm. things still exist in all the countries, which is yes. really fun to see.
Really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. And then after all this, you guys went to Mexico. Was this like a vacation from your vacation, like to unwind?
Totally was.
We did not suffer. We will say we lived in Isla Mujeres, which is it's like a 20-minute ferry ride off the coast from the actual town of Cancun. It is so beautiful. It's just this tiny island,
a mile wide and maybe 5 long.
Yeah,
it's tiny.
And we didn't want to live in Cancun, although we found the best tacos in the whole world in Cancun.
Yeah.
But we didn't want to live in a really touristy area. We wanted to live with local people.
Yeah.
And so we went to Isla, and it is, of course, touristy, but there are a lot of locals living on the island. Yes.
It's touristy for the day. Usually people, they do boat trips from Cancun to Isla for the day. I mean, there's hotels in the island, very expensive ones. But we just wanted to rent a house from a Mexican family, and then they lived downstairs, we lived upstairs, our daughter played with their niece. It was just a really good experience to kind of just get, like, fresh fruit from the corner or like fresh tortillas from the tortilla shop. And it was just a really amazing experience to really live the Mexican culture, to be surrounded by, you know, sounds and music in Mexico and that whole experience. It was
Mexico is really colorful and really loud. And it's just really, it's just such a wonderful country overall. The Mexican people are such fantastic people.
Yeah.
And the area where we're living now has a very large Hispanic population.
Mm-hmm.
And it just feels kind of like we're like home a little bit, you know,
we just feel
at home within that culture.
Like Hugo, it's probably like a small percentage of the classmates in,
are not Hispanic.
They're not Hispanic. So that's, we'll see how, I mean, hopefully his Spanish will kind of come back.
Yeah, they teach like a dual curriculum here in Spanish and English. So we're really excited for our kids to have that learning experience, to be able to kind of grow up among the Spanish-speaking, you know, demographics.
And they're very good at soccer, too. And Hugo loves soccer. So.
Got kids in soccer.
I'm going to start winding this down. What's in the future for you guys as far as travel goes? I understand you're going to stay put for a little bit where you are. Any plans for the future?
I got a winery here in Washington through half of this year. And then our kids, they wanted to go back to public school. They've been homeschooled for a couple of years. I think they were sort of missing the socialization aspect.
Friends, they're tired of us. They want to make friends,
totally
play soccer.
So we put them in public school for the year, but we still have our RV. We just remodeled it.
Yeah.
We decided to live in it for a few years at least, so we wanted to sort of make it feel like ours.
Yeah.
But we don't know. We're going to keep traveling. Obviously not full-time, 100%. You know, that's expensive and makes you tired. But I think our next trip, we're saving up to go to Northern Africa. Our family would like to go to Morocco and Egypt for a couple weeks. So I think that's our next big trip. That we have planned.
The kids definitely need some sort of stability. Like, they miss the, like Kaylee said, friends. So we just can't, we just have to, you know, slow down for just a little bit. And then I know they're going to miss traveling again. They're going to ask us when we're going to go here, we're going to go there. But we'll give them 1 year to kind of get settled in school and just make some friends.
Yeah. And we're going to keep traveling for sure. We still have the RV, so we want to make small trips out. We're thinking of going up to Banff in Canada and Lake Louise with the RV and seeing some of that, and you know, still small travels, not quite as time consuming, but I don't think we'll ever stop traveling because it just gets in your blood and you can't, you're like, oh, we got to go here and we got to see this and we missed that, you know.
It's so crazy because you think 1 year, it's a lot, you can see the world, I guess, but out of 196, we're only able to see 27. So it's a big world out there, and it takes a decade or more, your lifetime.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lifetime is not enough to see everything there is to see in the world, for sure.
And you have the benefit of watching YouTube channels. Like, we want to go to Scandinavia, but in the meantime, we get to watch you go to Scandinavia, which is pretty fun.
And I was watching some of the videos from you guys when you were in India and all over the place, and in Mexico also as well. And I just saw the video of your remodeling of the RV. How did that go? Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because I know a lot of people are interested in see what you changed, what didn't work from before, and you have improved upon.
Yeah, we dug so deep into it that we just wanted to do just the floor and then paint. And then we're like, gosh, you know, now we just have to like get new curtains. We got a new countertop, new faucets. You just keep digging yourself deeper, but the final result is going to be great. And hopefully we'll up the resale value when we do sell it, if we do sell it. But we made it so nice now that we just want to keep it. You know, it's like, why would we sell? We put so much work and money into this thing now. And we made it feel like home, and even the kids love it now.
Yeah, we were able to make it a little bit more conducive for our lifestyle. We put bunk beds in for the kids and stuff. So we're able to live in it, you know, full time without feeling cramped and like we're in a motorhome.
Yeah.
It feels more like home.
It feels like home now. We got rid of the booth, and the booth always represents an RV mounted to the thing and a couch and stuff like that. The recliners, whatever they call them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we just like put our own personal touches to it, and it just feels nice.
It was a project and a half. It took us a lot of work, but it was totally worth it.
Yeah, I did exactly the same thing in my travel trailer. I got rid of the booth and the TV. And I think you got rid of the TV as well, right?
Yeah.
We had like a big fireplace with a TV spot in it, and we just tossed it. Yeah. We were like, we don't need this.
They make them so look alike. I wish like who designed RVs, they made them a little bit more, individualized instead of just like one. You know, they all look exactly the same for the most part.
For me, it's the brown color that is really hard to like. You're like, oh, so brown.
He also made filming really hard because now I don't even need any, just the white walls reflect. So I don't need any external light to film videos. It's just the lighting is beautiful in here now.
It looks so much bigger now. And I think the manufacturer should take a little bit of some design cues from the European manufacturers as well, because over there, it's they look a lot more modern.
Space use, you know, and just convenience down over there. They've just, it's beautiful. The Heimers and stuff, we went in a few new ones and we were like, oh my God.
And the price is just right for the what they're asking. They were like in the 30,000 euro kind of things, but they're just beautiful.
Amazing.
Yeah.
By the way, for those of our listeners who are not looking, what type of RV do you have? Because we never talked about that.
Oh, ours is a 2008 Itasca Sun Cruiser. It's a 38 feet long. It has two slides. So it's probably close to 400 square feet when you open the slides, maybe 360, something in there. Because the only reason we bought 400 square feet of flooring, I mean, we wasted some. But we just kind of like nailed it down to the, you know, last board sort of thing. So
it's significantly bigger, I think, than we need.
Yeah, totally.
It feels good now that we live in it full time. But I think smaller would be so much more flexible because you know, with 38 feet, you can't go into the national parks. And there's a lot of limiting factors about a beast this size going down the highway.
Are you thinking of downsizing at some point in the future?
Yeah. As the kids, you know, get older, and obviously probably we can't go through three teenagers in the RV. We're going to eventually get a home and whatever. But for us, as we get, you know, older, that we travel just the two of us, this would be way too big. I mean, if you want it or not, Fiona is 13 in 5 years. She'll be gone. So, and then, you know, off to college.
We saw a family, just a couple in the Redwoods a couple years ago, and they had one of those Iveco vans that you get in Europe.
It's like a 4x4.
Yeah, they had outfitted that sucker.
Yeah.
And they had a map of where they had gone in the world, so they had driven from France. They were French. They had driven from France all the way to the tip of Africa, taken a boat over to the tip of South America, and gone all the way up to Alaska, and then they were back at the Redwoods.
Yeah.
And Angel and I were like, that's what we're going to do when the kids are gone. We're just going to get an old van and outfit it and just travel and just work a little bit and then travel. And I know that sounds like the opposite of what you do when you're like 50s and 60s, you know, like, oh, get a home, you know, retire, golf. But none of that seems important at this point. Yeah. Like just seeing the rest of the world just feels
it's just
like
amazing because with the 4x4, the limit, I mean, you have limitations, but it's not like a RV or a van. You can go in the places where, you know, cars don't go. So that intrigues us. And you can spend the night, you know, in the middle of nowhere.
It's totally on the list. We're going to like drive around the globe. It's going to happen.
Yeah. Drive around the globe is the next crazy adventure for us.
Yeah.
looking forward to that one for sure. Well, it's been great talking to you guys. Maybe we can do this once a year, and you give us your progress on your RVing life.
Or a pint before that.
Yeah, maybe somewhere. if you trek back out to the West, we'll catch up with you.
Well, I'm thinking we might be able to meet up next year. Next year, I want to do the lower 48 before I turn 48. I'm running out of time. I have less than a year left.
Yeah.
It's crazy with this lifestyle, how often you meet people. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm. So definitely we'll meet up again, maybe next year. Looking forward to that. Anyway, say hello to the children, and where can people find you online if they want to see your videos or your Instagrams or all that?
Where can they find us?
Oh, online? I'm sorry. Yes, we are When in Rome Travels on YouTube. You can just search that on YouTube, or whenintrometravels.com. It's our website. And we're on social media under When in Rome Travels, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, stuff like that. Mm-hmm.
All right. That's great. Thank you so much for your time and being here. And it's always a great pleasure chatting with you guys.
Thanks, Robert.
Appreciate it.
Well, it was so much fun to be able to talk once again live with Angela and Kaylee of When in Rome Travels. We've kept in touch throughout the, not so many years, but throughout definitely the year and a half, almost 2 years we've known each other. And if you want to listen to the first interview that I did with them, that was on June 2nd, episode 11 of the podcast. So we go way back. The whole year. Anyways, until next Friday, thank you so much for listening, and see you on the road. We're living the RV dream and loving the RV lifestyle. Free in my RV.
I'm riding in my RV.
My RV,
wherever I want to be, 'cause I'm free in my RV.